Back in February, The Brian Lehrer Show, which appears on our co-producing station, WNYC, began a series. It was called The End of War, and it featured conversations about whether or not war is inevitable. On Memorial Day, we played a portion of that series on The Takeaway and collected your thoughts about whether or not we can ever eradicate war completely. Now today, on the last day of that series, we're talking with Brian and John Horgan. Horgan is the author of The End of War, the book that inspired the series. And so, John, my first question is for you. You propose the idea that there could be an end to war. I imagine most people think that's incredibly unrealistic, don't they?
Most people are pessimistic, and I think that they're pessimistic for bad reasons, because they think war is part of human nature, or war is the inevitable result of scarcity of resources, these sorts of things. And my hope is that even if people start out pessimistic and clinging to the views that they've always had, they will eventually, after they start thinking about this issue, come around to a more optimistic point of view. And I see signs that that's already happening.
So before we hear from Brian about some of the arguments he's gotten, let me pick a little fight with you here. Okay. And say that, you know, I imagine that for a lot of people who are not scientists or anthropologists or peace activists, one of the reasons why they might think that war and fighting is biological is because they see their own kids, right? I mean, Since when do siblings not fight with one another? It feels like when you see infants that fighting is natural.
I have children. I was a child once myself. I play hockey. My fellow hockey players tell me that I am rather aggressive on the ice sometimes. So yes, I do think we are innately aggressive and competitive, some people more than others. But there's an enormous gap between that kind of competition, which is healthy, and war, the mass violence, killing on a large scale, that is unnatural. Most people are traumatized by having to kill others.
Brian, what kind of response? I mean, do you get these arguments about my children fight all the time? Is that what you're hearing from people?
Well, we have gotten hundreds of responses. About 60% of them have said, yes, war is inevitable.
Over half say war will always be with us.
Now, that's optimistic relative to John's sample. He tends to find 80%, right, or 90%.
Yeah, 80 to 90%.
Say war is inevitable. But I think that I am a good example, having worked on this series now, inspired by John's book, of his success, because he has done with me exactly what he said before he was trying to do, which is to provoke people to think in a different way. So, for example, I started out thinking that war probably is ingrained in human nature. We descended from the apes and the chimpanzees, as Jane Goodall discovered to her dismay, have basically wars with each other,
and
too, in groups from time to time.
Absolutely.
That's right. But as John points out in the book, our other cousins are the bonobos, and they don't practice war. So what do we really have in our own human nature as it has evolved? Does it mean war is inevitable, like the chimps, or not inevitable, like the bonobos? That indicates to me that there is some amount of culture involved, which I think is John's main point, not biology, but culture, and that culture can change. Slavery, for example, one of John's strongest points in the book, in my opinion, is that slavery was once accepted around the world as a legitimate institution. Now we think of that idea and we're horrified by it, and we think, how could people have ever thought that?
Although it still exists.
It still exists, but people wouldn't stand up today almost anywhere and say, well, this is legitimate that this exists.
One of the points that I make in my book is that war and genocide occur more because humans are sheep than because we're wolves. What I mean by that is that we are creatures of culture and custom and habit, and we're herd animals to a certain extent. So I see what happened in Nazi Germany, for example, as the power of an ideology to transform a people and make them all behave like sadistic sociopaths. Culture can also be harnessed in a positive direction, and that's why you have some formerly very warlike societies, Sweden and Switzerland are two examples I like to cite, suddenly becoming extremely peaceful through an act of collective will. They just decide that war is stupid, it's irrational, they don't want to do it anymore, and they become a peaceful people.
You quote Margaret Mead, who said, war is an invention like marriage or cooking.
Right.
But, you know, among the responses that I've gotten from listeners, a lot of them have to do with yes, but. So there are certain preconditions that people feel need to be in place before we could abolish war. One of them is, which I tend to line up with myself, has to do with gender.
Right.
And I know you argue against this in the book, but I think if we want to...
What if women rule the world?
Yes. If we want to... Look at who's in prison. Never mind war. Look at who's in prison here and elsewhere for violent crimes, ordinary run-of-the-mill street crimes around the world. It's like 85% men. And so I think one of the biggest things that we have to do if we want to try to abolish war in the long term is guarantee the education of every girl in the world, or at least at the same percentage that boys are educated, and that will lead to their leadership roles.
I just want to address the points that Brian just made, because they're very important ones that I hear all the time. When people say we need to have more gender equality, is that any kind of society can be warlike. And so in spite of the enormous increases in women's rights over the last century, take our country, for example, we have continued to be a very warlike nation. So my analysis leads me to think that you can't get rid of war by creating conditions that supposedly will get rid of war. You get rid of war by getting rid of war. You get rid of militarism by getting rid of militarism. And then actually, the analysis of war through prehistory suggests that you will get movement on some of the other social issues that you want. You will get more gender equality. You will get more democracy. You will get more economic equality if you get rid of militarism.
It's an incredible conversation. And the book itself, The End of War, John Horgan is the author, and Brian Lehrer is the host of the fantastic Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC, our co-producer. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Les.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.